Welcome to or welcome back to the Gravitational Podcast. I am joined here today by the incredible Jennifer Cho, and I'm going to let her do her own intro because this woman, I'm just going to be over here fangirling for a second.
No pressure.
None at all.
Well, thank you so much for having me on today. Hello, everyone. My name is Jennifer Cho. I am currently the CEO of Creator Deck. It is an influencer marketing agency that was started 14 years ago, and we have been evolving with the influencer landscape. So I am 8 months into my new agency role. You were with me the night I got the offer.
Yes.
So it's been a full circle moment in talking to you about this and catching up. But yeah, I have a creator that spans marketing and comms across a number of different industries. I have definitely spent quite a bit of time on the agency side. So from Weber Shandwick, the GM, the PR world, back to my experience days, launching Metro PCS. So definitely have quite a bit of experience on the agency side. But on the brand side, most recently I was the CMO and CEO of The Wing, the women's co-working and social club. So gosh, that was already like 2 years ago. But started my career in the music industry, owning a battle rap label. So I think that is my fun fact in my intro. So definitely had quite a bit of experience, brand side, agency side, in all things that humans are interested in. So from music to makeup, to fashion, to telephones. I feel like I've been a marketer in the things that I consume. So,
yeah.
Hi.
There are not many people who can say that they've been like, yeah, I've touched a little bit of all the things that I'm interested in. Like in some way I've worked in or transformed. And then when you're talking about the work that you've done in these spaces, it's not just like, oh yes, I sold cell phones. It's like I've done things. So okay, there are so many things about your story that I love so much, and I have been thinking about having this conversation since before this podcast even existed.
Wow.
Because when we initially spoke and I was doing my stalking, I am known as
networking.
It's all about the image. As I was doing my networking and I'm looking, scrolling on your resume, and I'm like, she did what? Okay. So I am very excited to have this conversation. I'm very excited to dive a bit deeper.
Thank you.
Okay. So take us back.
Wow. Okay.
Take us back to young Jen. Take us back to high school Jen.
Wow.
What was she thinking? She's getting ready to graduate.
Okay.
Like, what does the world look like from her eyes? What does she think that she's going to do?
Wow, okay, wow, we're really throwing back. Okay, young Jen in high school went to school in New Jersey. So Friels High School, shout out to the Jersey Shore, literally one of the Jersey Shore high schools. And I was in a pre-med program. So my high school experience was a little challenging. I was the only Asian person in my area. I was part of this program that was a medical science program. It was a magnet school. So I got bused in a little blue bus with like four people to a different high school because we were part of the Medical Sciences Learning Center. So affectionately known as techers. So maybe not the coolest people in the school.
Maybe.
We had the same classes, like the 25 of us for 4 years.
Oh, wow.
So we were like this little group that like grew up together. I had done 750 hours of internships across a dentist, a cardiologist, and just regular hospital hours, honestly working food, putting together trays, all to find out, oh, and research, like second Westinghouse finalist for science project because of this med sci program. So all my parents were like, she's going to be a doctor. It's going to be great. Immigrant family, right? After all of that, I realized that the last thing I wanted to do was be a doctor. So I literally said to my parents, I'll be anything but a doctor. And they're like, oh, great, you're going to be a lawyer. Okay, amazing. I'm like, sure, whatever you say, Mom, I'm going to college. So I went to Columbia, the city of New York. This girl from Jersey Shore Farm, Peach Farm in New Jersey, is in the city in Harlem of Manhattan. And I'm like, I don't know what I want to do with my life, but I just want to be in New York. It was the first time I was out of my very conservative household. I was able to see Manhattan, to experience Manhattan, and I was like, I don't know what I want to be when I grow up, but I'm going to live my life. So I feel like college was as much about academia as it was learning social skills, meeting people that look different than me, meeting people that look the same as me, right? Like, I didn't see anybody like myself in New Jersey. So I think this is where I was doing kind of my college career. My parents still wanted me to go to law school. So junior year, this is where my career takes a little bit of an interesting pivot. I thought I was being really smart by getting an internship with an entertainment law firm. So that law firm was representing Eminem ahead of his Marshall Mathers LP. So of course I get hired, I'm supposed to work for the attorney, like the partner, and then Eminem's was being managed by the same office, and of course his project blew up larger than anyone could have expected. Instead of making photocopies of red line contracts, I was actually being called to go to like Tower Records and set up a table for a CD signing. Okay, this is like a long time ago, but this is what we did. Artists like sat there and like signed a CD. Yeah. So I was like, oh, I was the person like set up the tablecloth and like, you know, manage the line. And so I did that the summer of my junior year. No surprise to anyone, it was very exciting to be around that space.
Yeah.
And I realized that there was definitely a business of music. You didn't have to be the talent. Plenty of people behind the talent kind of feeding the machine were able to have very lucrative careers, right? Like to me, that was success. Money equaled success as an immigrant child. You see that and you're like, oh, I can do that without having to make my parents pay for another 3 years of school. So I continued to work for Eminem while I was in college, continuing my internship with him, and decided when I was graduating that I wasn't going to be a bubble vest financial district person. I wanted to wear flowery dresses. So I decided I was going to work for someone I was a huge fan of. So my first job out of school was being the executive assistant to Aaliyah's label and president. Right. Aaliyah, the singer, the legendary R&B songstress. So yeah, that was my first job out of college, and I got hired in the New York office. That was exciting in and of itself, but that's when Aaliyah was doing quite a bit of work in LA, kind of moving from music into film. So I was able to relocate to Los Angeles to support kind of the extension of the label into like Hollywood and movie production. So yeah.
Thankfully, much, much before the cyber sharks.
Yes, that was.
Thankfully.
We had very pretty vehicles.
Yeah.
It didn't look like ugly future things.
Like
it was
rocks.
A beautiful time. No rocks. There was actually real design. People were driving Bentleys.
Ooh.
Rolls Royces. They were actually like aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
The good old days.
Good old days. Back in the day. Yes, definitely, definitely.
So, beginning of your career was not at all where you thought you were going. Certainly not where your parents thought you were going.
Political theory major, okay?
Amazing.
Like,
amazing.
Yes.
So, what did your consumption of music look like growing up?
Gosh, okay.
Because you mentioned you were in a bit of a conservative household,
yes.
Usually not really going hand in hand with Eminem and Aaliyah. So.
No. But interestingly enough, if you think about music and you think about the time that I was in high school, so now I graduated high school in 97. So I feel like I was growing with hip hop and R&B,
right.
Like as like generations now understand it to be like this classic era of hip hop and R&B. I still remember in high school, because I wasn't allowed to really watch television, my parents thought 90210 were grown-ups. They were like, no high school children should watch this show because you can't be doing those things.
Yeah.
I was like, oh dear. Okay, so I wasn't allowed to watch those shows. So really, the only thing I could kind of be outside of the boundaries of my parents was actually music. For those that enjoyed hip-hop and R&B in the early 90s, hip-hop was all about empowerment. It was about breaking free from the structure. It was about living and being creative in a structure that wasn't created for you. And to me, that was like my empowerment, right? Like I had been listening to like Blind Melon and all these kind of like nice rock bands. Like, oh, that's cute. And then I still remember like the first time I heard like Missy Elliott's like, I Can't Stand the Rain. And I was like, what is this sound? Like, you know, she had those interesting, like Timberland produced sounds that you had never heard of. And gosh, the first Aaliyah record I heard, right? Like Age Ain't Nothing But a Number. I was like, that's right. I'm a grown ass woman. I am 16 and I know I don't want to live in New Jersey, right? Like it was just very empowering.
Yeah.
And that was like the only way that I could feel that feeling about like being an adult, feeling empowered, breaking beyond the stereotypes or the expectations of my immigrant parents. It felt like the system to me. Like I didn't know what the patriarchy really was.
Right.
I only knew what my immigrant parents expected of me. Doctor, lawyer, that's it. And I'm like, there's so much more to me, Mom. And I felt like hip hop and R&B at that time, the music was the soundtrack to my liberation.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, interestingly enough, I still only listen to music from that era because once I worked in the music industry, when I hear like, you know, an Ice Spice record now, I'm like, I wonder who she paid here. Like who of her dad's friends is helping her with a career? Is this a paid for spin? Like what's the marketing budget look like?
Right.
Like I can't actually just enjoy it.
Yeah.
So I have to actually go back to that music that I'm talking about. The music
that
made me feel empowered, that made me feel excited, that challenged me to be different. So I still to this day listen to hip hop and R&B from like the 90s to like the early 2000s bookend.
That's like 98% of my playlist. No disagreement or judgment here. Okay, so now I have to ask you.
Okay.
This is, I was not even going to go here with this, but.
Uh-oh.
Who is in your top three?
Oh, wow.
Because I can't have you sitting here and having this conversation and I don't ask that.
Oh,
I can
goodness.
Already hear the amount of criticism
my
that I get
goodness.
For not asking that question. So yes, who's in your top three?
Okay, I'm like getting hot because this is recorded. People haven't asked me that in a long time. I will say my top three, I'm going to base it on like repeat plays of entire album catalogs.
Ooh, okay. Which okay. that alone is a metric that you, I would argue, can't even use with certain music from like 2010 on. But
that's my point.
Know.
I'm right there with you. So that's how I'm going to gauge it because that's when real hip hop was measured. You can listen to an album through and through and you knew exactly why yep. you were listening to it. So I have to say Aaliyah. I feel like her entire catalog, she's literally the same age as myself. So I felt like all of that for her formative records were like my formative experience. So I continue to keep Aaliyah top of mind in our playbook, in our playlist. Okay, so when it gets to rappers, it gets way more complicated. I'm gonna try to like pick in categories. So I will probably say Fabulous is, I feel like, one of my most underrated and favorite rappers.
Interesting, okay.
Yes, F-A-B-O for sure. I feel like he has such a creative lyricism that's so visual. Like I still remember when he said like Yao Ming and stilettos, like those are like visuals, right? Like you just know exactly, it's like culturally relevant. I think he's very like underrepresented in kind of like the legends.
Yeah.
I guess I'd say Fabulous for like rapper. Most of my rappers, I mean, yes, I'm gonna give the nods to like the legends, but you know, there's only so much head bumping I can do to like Big and Jay and everyone and Nas. Yeah. They're like very serious. So like
that's fair. That's
you know,
fair.
I'm like I respect it, but like Fab always makes me like kind of bop a little bit.
Okay.
But also, you know, so I feel like he's the and then let's have a nod to the R&B groups.
Okay.
Because I mean, that's where Destiny's Child and,
yeah.
But I have to say my favorite would be 112.
Okay.
Cover to cover, album to album. I mean, the original 112, I know they've kind of like split up, but they will always be, there's like new guys standing up. I'm like, this is not what I'm talking about, but anywhere from like Wolf's involvement with like Mace and Puff, because I felt like Puff and Big kind of like, and Mace was like the palatable rapper that brought me into like the real rap scene.
Yeah.
You know, he was like the PG that like brought me all the way to Eminem, which would be like NC-17, but he like was like the intro, like starter kit. And I felt like 112 was part of like that energy, like only you. And like, it just kept going. Like, you know, Peaches and Cream is probably one of my favorite like dance records. Cupid is still one of my favorite love songs.
Yeah.
So yeah, if I had to pick like R&B group, that's category 112.
Yeah.
R&B singers, Aaliyah. Rappers, I would say Fabulous for the fun part, but like add in all of the legends underneath that for the respect part. So,
okay.
So yes.
So it's like top three and then there's like another 50 underneath, but like it's like top three.
This is a tough question.
Okay,
it's a tough question. I had to go by category.
It's a tough question. It can be incredibly controversial.
That's why I was like, I gotta play it a little bit safe and give myself a little bit
exactly.
of wiggle room.
You gave yourself the buffer for sure.
Add two.
See, you've done this before.
I've been attacked before. People will still have feelings about this.
Yeah,
this is like the safest kind of.
Like your media training show.
Yes, that's right. No cancel culture.
Exactly.
Keep it in the middle.
Exactly. It'll always be here. So we went from Eminem to Aaliyah.
Yes.
And then was there something else in between Metro PCS? Or was it Metro next?
It was Metro next.
Okay.
Well, yeah, it was Aaliyah. I had Sony in between. That's how I found Smack DVD, the label.
Yes.
So I had that going with Smack, my partner, Troy Mitchell. So we had our label for, gosh, like 5 years. We had my original mentor and attorney kind of be like our guide through this whole process.
Yeah.
So that was an amazing 5 year journey. I feel like even though we sold all of those millions of albums and such, the biggest kind of like cherry on top for me was when we came number 7 on the Billboard Independent chart. So that was our last album. It was our charting album. Gosh, we came out with, remember Young Jock, It's Going Down? It was the same week as that release. So number 7 was like a good one to have because he was crushing it with that record.
Yeah.
That's when Tom Cruise was jumping on couches. But anyway, just give you context on like timing.
Yeah,
so it was that. And then it went from Smack to Metro PCS, which is super interesting.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, rap life. It's great. Paperwork, show identity. Fine. But the music industry was, not really built for women. They called battle rap like urban music. It's like not even rap music. It was like even more urban than rap. And there was no one that looked like me in that space. So it generally just wasn't really a healthy environment for my psychology. So when I was looking for something to kind of expand into, I was like, how do I take this experience and move it into marketing? You know, my interview for Metro PCS was hysterical because I didn't know what experiential marketing was. I Googled it right before I got into the room, okay? Because a friend of mine was like, I don't know, they kind of like need someone who understands New York and New Jersey. And I'm like, okay, I grew up in Jersey. Run the streets with Smack. I know every corner of Queens and every bodega you need to know, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
This is when we're selling like mixtapes out of trunks.
Yeah.
So he said, just come to this meeting. It's like these corporate folks. They're like trying to sell a cell phone. And I was like, okay. So this was kind of like Jeezy was doing the Sprint Boost Mobile thing.
Yes.
Because remember, the prepaid phones were, let's just say it out loud, they were marketing towards drug dealers, right?
Right.
People who didn't want to be traced.
Right.
So Metro PCS was coming out with a prepaid phone. And I still remember I walked into the interview. They're like, okay, hi, who are you? I'm like, yeah, that's what I've done. I'm like, okay, we have a question for you. I'm like, okay. So it's like the problem question. And they're like, yeah. So we put a bunch of brand ambassadors out to like promote this store in Newark and everyone's shooting at them. We don't understand what's happening. And I still remember being like, so where in Newark? And they told me the corner and I was like, oh, that's blood territory and you're wearing Crip colors. And I still remember looking around the room at this like corporate team and they were like you heard people like breathe.
Yeah.
Like gasp. And I was like, yeah, you know, you just need to let them know this is like some corporate shit. And like, yeah, we're not here to like, we're not clocking on the corner.
Anything,
we're sending
right.
out flyers for the phone. Maybe we just wear white shirts with the purple logo instead of a purple shirt with like the white logo. You'll be fine. Probably just need to like talk to like the mixtape owner on that corner to like let him know because he's a blood. And I still remember they were like, you are hired and we're going to call you our national director of strategy. And I was like, National director of strategy, because I knew that was Crip territory, and I was like, I guess this is how I go corporate. Hey, and that was like my first agency job.
Yeah,
they hired me on the spot.
Amazing. And what did the next 6 months of that journey look like?
I was learning the agency business.
Yeah.
I mean, I was so lucky to have a female owner guide me. I did not understand at the time how much that would change my life and my career trajectory because she went out of her way to teach me the things I needed to know. Everything from budgeting to allowing me to control my own destiny. It was very entrepreneurial. She's like, these are your goals. If you staff it and you manage the budget and you make a profit, I'll give you a percentage of the profit. Like it was very like organized, you know, very entrepreneurial. She's like, yeah, your career is what you want to make of it. I'll help you grow. I'll help you win these additional accounts, but you have to do the work. So she was able to help me grow the business. So we kept competing RFP after RFP. We originally started in New Jersey. Then we took over kind of the five boroughs, like the five areas of New York and New Jersey. And then we continued to kind of grow with their expansion. So we were able to grow the account quite a bit. I started off with zero team members and ended up, gosh, like 5 years later, I had a team of 1,500.
Wow.
Yeah, it was remote before remote was cool.
Yeah.
We had like a little one-bedroom apartment in New York that we would kind of like all the regional New York, New Jersey leads would meet at like once a week. We would meet and then I would travel to do the same thing to train the teams across the country. So it was actually like a five-year journey where I learned kind of the understanding of marketing in general, how experiential plugged into larger PR or the kind of like media agency or the creative agency. It was the first time I saw like an agency mix of that scale because Metro PCS was publicly traded. It was the first time I've seen such large budgets. For 5 years, I had my nose down and just learned the business.
What do you think looking back was the most unexpected lesson that you got from those 5 years?
Oh, interesting. You know, what I think I developed during that time was how to hire people. Brand ambassadors, you know, they're part-time employees, they're independent contractors. When you're interviewing brand ambassadors, there's like less stakes because it's not like full-time. So you have to make decisions really quickly.
Yeah.
On whether this person is going to be like a great hourly worker for you, right? So you do like one massive casting call and interviews like 5 minutes usually. And because I ended up hiring 1,500, let's just say we met way more.
Yeah.
I feel like after the fact, I realized how quickly I had to make those decisions. And when it comes to hiring, I still always trust my gut.
Mm.
Because a lot of that is like first impression, quick decisions, has a lot to do with chemistry, first impressions, interactions. And now I call myself like the talent guru. I feel like I can kind of like tell very quickly, like if someone makes sense for our world and our culture.
Yeah.
And I don't think I would have been able to have that skill sharpened so much had I not gone through those 5 years of just meeting so many people, and then watching them go, right? Yeah, like hourly to 20 hours a week to salaried, because that was like our pipeline of executives. Right. So yeah, I think that's the biggest thing I learned during that time.
Yeah, interesting. And the job market at present, trash. is that new though? No, arguably it's gotten worse. My thought is that more people are talking about it. I don't know that it's really gotten worse. I think there's just more conversation around it.
I agree with you.
There are a lot of things that are slowly going downhill, so I think that's like, it's got to, you know, kind of go with it. But so with that in mind, what are some tips that you would give on first impressions? Oh. Going into an interview, I know for me, I've definitely had some experiences with interviewing where there have been things that I thought were, let's just say, common sense that are seemingly not so common. Like maybe you don't show up in sweatpants to a job interview. So curious to hear from you, having operated at a high level across different fields. Mm. What are some of your like immediate, this is a green flag, like do this for sure.
Sure.
Not very difficult. You don't have to rework your entire life.
Right.
But maybe don't go into the interview in, you know, baggy sweatpants and dirty sneakers.
Yeah, I've had some very interesting interviews of late, I will say. I feel like interviewing, like you mentioned, the conversation around interviewing and the expectations, there's been quite a bit of there's been many points of view, I'll say. Very simply put, I do believe in kind of traditional etiquette, also in the world of common sense.
Right.
So very simply put, I would say, be prepared, which means be early. If you're on time, you're late. You should be on the call, right? Like you should prepare. You should look presentable. I'm not asking you to put on a full face of makeup or lashes, right? But maybe look like you brushed your teeth. Like presentable. Be clean,
right?
In the way that you present, and be prepared. Maybe actually look at the company website. Have two or three questions. It's so interesting nowadays. As the CEO of a smaller agency, we only have about 50 people. I am the final interview of every person at the company, because once the team has decided they want to bring this person into our fold, right ahead of, usually at the same time we're doing references, I do just like a hello, right? Are there any questions about the agency that you haven't had answered? You didn't know who to ask? Is there anything you want to see from the agency's leader? This is like your safe place where you can ask me questions, right? And then I can get kind of a feel on like kind of the last like chemistry check of the next human we're bringing into our family.
Yeah.
I usually schedule 30 minutes for it, and you'd be amazed at how many people actually have zero questions and giggle through like 3 minutes and then get off the call.
Really?
Right? Yeah, like it's actually like more than half of the people that I meet, and I'm like, wow. I'm not like fully hierarchical. I do these interviews even with interns because I believe in a flat org. So I would expect that you would have, even if it's like as simple as like Google, like CEO has a vision for the company.
Right.
I might eye roll in my mind because I answer that question all the time, but I would love at least that question. But like zero questions, that makes me feel like you have zero interest. Like this can be any job because you didn't take the time to like, it doesn't even have to be a question. It could be like an observation why Creator Deck is exciting, you know, like be prepared. So yeah, be prepared. Know about the company. Don't make the company feel like you are, you know, just another like opportunity. Ask questions and then be pleasant. I actually have told people on interviews to smile. Like this is not like an interrogation, right? When you're interviewing, you're selling yourself. So at least be calm, do a jumping jack before the call. Like sometimes I think nervousness is like, you want the job so you're nervous, but then I also see quite a bit of nervousness where you're just not prepared and you're like fully distracted, which makes me feel like it's a no. So preparedness. I do think there's room for, probably like a more philosophical conversation, but I do think that some of the younger generations, given COVID, given remote experiences, I almost think there really is room for like a school of etiquette, because when it comes to agency and client relationships, I think sometimes on the brand side, you might not see it as much, but an agency is all about the etiquette and the customer service that you provide your clients. And without that common sense, you can call it common sense.
Right.
I do think it's a little bit of etiquette. Like agency life is not for you. So I wonder if there will be something like that that comes out, because just some of those people skills are a little bit lacking nowadays.
Yeah. I have noticed that for sure, and I've heard that conversation swirling quite a bit of it almost like walking the line between, is this a result of the extended isolation?
Mm-hmm.
or is this just a mix of like the generation was already leaning towards some more antisocial tendencies,
sure.
and then that kind of just magnified it, and it was like, well, everything you were working on, you kind of don't need actually for basically 2 years.
Yeah.
So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that continues to to evolve for sure. Be prepared.
Be prepared.
And people skills, especially if you are trying to go into agency life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
More than anything, right?
I think the art of establishing rapport is something that is in fact an art.
I was going to say, did I laugh out loud?
It is very much a skill, and I think is maybe a bit more overlooked than than it should be.
That's why I'm laughing, yes, but also kind of crying
a
little bit.
Yeah, we laugh so we don't sob.
Correct, correct. Because that is the core of an agency client relationship, right?
It's all about the people.
It's all about the people. Gosh, I don't know how many times I have to say it's what's unsaid.
Yes.
You know, like for example, let's do a little role play. I'm the client, the agency person. Hi, agency.
Hi, how are you? How's the family?
Family's great. Also, I'm putting you out for RFP. I just have to do it.
Okay, all right.
And then now you're telling me about this. So hey, Jen, CEO, I'm like, how was the status meeting?
Yeah, not great.
Wait, you're way too advanced. You're not role-playing well. You're way too advanced. Jen, they said they had to do an RFP because it's just time. It's fine. We're doing amazing.
The slow nod.
We're doing amazing, though. And I'm...
You're like...
The client says you have an RFP. It's never just a thing.
Right.
Like, your business is threatened.
Right.
So they're not going to say that to you. So maybe know that,
right.
like, everything's not fine.
It's in fact not fine.
But in the notes, I'll get a, client was fine, we're getting an RFP, we're getting RFP'd, but they said we're doing great, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
Reading beyond what is said.
If right? I may, you're not.
Because your reaction was the real reaction.
Right.
Like, oh, Jed, right?
Right?
Like, that is not what I'm getting. I'm like, you're way advanced.
I'm sorry.
Sorry. Way advanced.
One of my other career choices was acting.
Okay. Yeah. There you go.
Yes.
Like, I can totally see that, by the way.
Yeah. Exactly. Maybe. We'll see. We're not too far from Broadway.
We're not. It's just a hop, skipping away.
Exactly.
We can totally go
just
down
off.
That. Yeah. It's an easy. But yeah, I mean, those are the things that, like, I don't even fault my young people.
Yeah.
Because you have to be in... You have to have heard that before.
Right.
But like, these are things that I realize that on Zoom calls are not picked up. We've all been in an agency office where we hear about it.
Exactly.
And we're like, we see someone being like, I have to tell my boss we're being RFP'd, right? And it's like a stressful thing. So they see the reaction.
Right.
They're like, I should also react
be concerned.
Like
yeah.
that. I
yeah,
guess
yeah,
this
yeah.
is concerning,
yeah.
right? But I feel like we haven't solved for that kind of like education.
Right.
And I think we're just trying to be creative and figure out those ways. But yeah, it's definitely different than when I started.
Ebbs and flows.
That's right.
Interesting evolutions for sure. Okay, so we skipped through quite a bit, but you're now at the helm of Creator Deck.
Yes.
Which is very exciting. We mentioned this a bit in the beginning.
Yep.
But I was with you the night that you found out, which was
that's
so
magical.
Cool. It was such an amazing, so we were at a dinner, an amazing community of women, and Jennifer forgets the email and we like you could have heard a pin drop because we all knew she was waiting to hear and everybody's pulling for you and you're like, I got the email, and the whole table just
stops.
Everybody froze. She's like, I got it, and we all you would have it looked like somebody won the Super Bowl.
I mean,
and I think Creator Deck did
that's literally
being honest.
I mean, hey, shout out to Creator Deck, Helen, and the board. Yes, but talk about an amazing way to get news like that surrounded by a room of hype women who are literally
100%.
Cheering you on.
It was
amazing.
Best. I was like, can this be
any
like
more magical?
Every time that something good happens, can we just have this? Like there's a button we press and it's just like
the whole
from
room
the floor.
Is just
would
cheering you on. Yeah.
That would be great.
Ready with champagne, by the way.
Exactly.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah,
it
and
amazing.
Like a giant Chanel bag just because.
Let's do that.
Right?
Let's do that.
Why not?
I like that vision.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Yeah,
yeah, like
of
congratulations.
Yes. There you go.
Yeah. I love it.
Next time.
Next time, for
month
sure.
14.
That's right. That's
there
right.
We go.
Yes,
there
that's
we go.
Right. That's
there
right. Planning. Yes,
yeah.
Planning. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. So you're a CEO currently, which means that you do everything in some way, I feel, right? Like you've got your...
Yeah. Yeah, he's trying to pull me out, but yeah.
Right? I feel like that means that you have roles and responsibilities, but it's really at some point all of them.
That's right.
So what does your day usually look like? I know I've been traveling quite a bit, so a lot.
Says the traveler.
I know,
I was gonna say, not as much as you.
I might have some competition. So yeah, talk us through that. What does your day look like? What is on your desk?
Yeah, so I mean, travel does kind of change it a little bit, but for the most part, I still try to keep my routine very similar. So my team is based on the West Coast. So usually I am an early riser. So even in Eastern, I'm probably getting up at 5 or 6. That's just who I am nowadays. So I spend the morning trying to kind of read. I feel like as a CEO, I still need to understand what's happening in the world. So I spend a little time kind of reading and then organizing my day. I'm very much like an old school planner person. I have like my little checklist, like notebook, you know, like what has to get done today, what has to get done before the end of the week. So I usually use my morning hours to get through kind of like my own contributed work. Then there's the usual slate of meetings, right? So just keeping tabs on the company, you know, we're in a very like growth mode right now. So I'm heavily involved in new business. So making sure that the new business team has what they need in order to move forward. I'm kind of participating in the way that I need to. There are obviously certain people that I need to respond to that I can't delegate. So just really putting a lot of focus on the new business side. And then of course with the growth piece, just making sure that I'm also interviewing all of the people that are coming into our family, also recruiting people if I need to create new roles for new capabilities or anything that I'm trying to add as a cape to the company. So I feel like a lot of it's like people, the business, of course, the usual financials.
Yeah.
So yeah, during the day, it's usually pretty meeting heavy, which I'm sure you can expect. And then I try to make sure that I am clocking off at a normal hour so that I have a little bit of balance and I can start my morning fresh again. So that's usually kind of the routine. Like I said, if I'm traveling, it's really a very similar routine. It's just in a different city with a different time zone.
So it's interesting, especially as we jump across different industries. I'm very big on patterns. So I'm always looking for similarities. That's one of my personal hacks to how I learn, why it seems like I can pick things up so quickly. Mm. It's because I just identify commonalities and then I look at what's the most efficient way to execute that.
That makes so much sense.
I have certain things that I'm like, that's solid. There are others that are sometimes
it's okay. Fluid.
Exactly.
Yeah,
fluid. Balance.
Yeah, tried and true, fluid.
Balance.
Experimenting.
People. It all comes back to people. And I feel like we got to zoom in on that a little bit more. So you, through your career, have worked in different levels, have been in different leadership positions. How have you learned how to lead a team? Mm. And how has your leadership style changed and evolved as you've moved into these different roles?
That's a great question. You know, I think, how has my leadership style changed? I feel like you don't know what you don't know. Every experience informs your approach to leadership. How have I learned how to be a leader? You know, I think the best learning is seeing who you want to emulate and who you don't want to be. I mean, I do a ton of reading on leadership, don't get me wrong, like all the different kinds. There's like a servant leader, there's like, you know, there's all these different like kind of personas, right? Yeah. Ultimately, what I remember when I'm making decisions in the moment that define my leadership style, I always remember those who I wanted to be. And then in those moments, I'm like, oh, that would be, because we all have bad examples too. And I'm like, I don't want to be that. So very rarely am I kind of like philosophizing based on like a learned. It's very much like lived experience when it comes to informing my leadership style. So I think that's the advantage of moving around quite a bit. I've seen quite a bit of a range when it comes to different types of leaders.
So we're for sure going to need to come back, but I want to drive this point home because as we were talking earlier off camera, you shared that there is a very interesting little career pivot that you did, a through line that we didn't know we had. So you were almost on MasterChef.
I mean, yeah, season 8, shout out to season 8 winner. I totally would have kicked your ass. But But aside, that is our commonality. MasterChef Junior, apparently.
Yes.
Okay.
So had no idea that we had that in common in our stories of the most random of things. But I am so curious to hear, because at this point, oddly enough, the reason that you didn't end up doing the show was also another commonality that we have.
Yes.
But you were already established in your career. You had already done quite a bit.
Yep.
Were you concerned about the optics of, oh, she's gonna go do a cooking show? And like, how did you navigate that? Because I know for a lot of women, a lot of people, that can be a concern of like, basically, can I be multi-passionate and still be taken seriously?
Totally.
So how did you approach that?
So I think that kind of ladders into my approach to life in general. I feel like the most important thing is to not have any regrets. Every person that I talk to, every mentor, every person who's lived a full life, when you ask them what their advice is for you, it's never like, take the biggest job. I've never heard that.
Right.
Take that check. That never comes out,
right?
But what I hear all the time is, do not regret your life. Like, try things, do things, and explore both paths, right? Because what I think was really enlightening about that experience was I really love cooking.
Yeah.
I was like, maybe one day I'm smart enough to have a restaurant. I can run my own agency.
Yeah.
Since I can't run a restaurant, right? Like, so you have these like things where you imagine an alternate life for yourself. And, you know, when I got that call and I knew my boss was like, you have to choose between your job and this like chef career.
Yeah.
I had tried out for 6 months. So I had been cooking. I had been failing at cooking. I had amazing cooking experiences, but I felt like when I made that decision and I was like, okay, like I'm not gonna do this, I'm gonna keep my job, I was okay with that because I had explored this to the most fullest of my capacity. So I felt like I knew what I was saying no to, and that was okay. It was like a choice that I was making, but I had explored that path, right? So it wasn't necessarily about choosing like my body of work versus MasterChef. It was like, I had played around in this. I had seen what this could be. I imagined my life as close as I could see it.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? Like, I'm not there right now, right? Like, cooking was harder, way harder than I thought. Cooking for fun when like no one cares and your husband says everything's delicious is great.
Yeah.
Cooking for other people when you have to get it on the table at a certain time and they might have like allergies or might not like your food is not nearly as rewarding.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, I'm okay with like leaving that. And then, so yeah, my biggest advice is if there are opportunities to literally have like a full change of your life and that's something that you've even like romanticized in your head, do it, explore it, make sure that when you choose not to do that, that you don't have any regrets.
Yeah.
It's the only way you can feel okay about the decisions that you're making, because regret is the worst kind of like cancer. It makes you question every step that you're making, every tough choice that you make.
For sure.
So yeah, explore all the things, be curious. I mean, I feel like if I died tomorrow, like that would be okay. I've worked in every industry I've wanted to. I've met the people I wanted to, and I'm okay that I'm not a chef.
Yeah.
I'm very comfortable in being a CEO. Yeah. So.
I love that. There is quite a bit of controversy swirling right now because there is a certain football player who just delivered a commencement speech. And essentially, now, when I heard that, my PR brain said, first of all, this crisis management team is going to be stressed. Next, I said, thank God he's not mine. And then after that, I said, thank you so much for all of the free press, because my SEO is going to go through the roof because my company is literally called The Kitchen.
Love it.
And so all of the clips have been about that.
Oh, that's amazing. I didn't even think about that.
But I love that you just said that. And you're like, I'm very comfortable not being a chef. Not being in the kitchen. No, not being a chef.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah.
At the top, I'll be a CEO instead.
Yeah,
I'm very comfortable in my role as CEO.
I feel great. I'm doing great. I just had my last board meeting. Shout out to my board. Crushing it. So, like, very comfortable, very good at being a CEO.
You.
Also, you can't be a CEO. So how dare you tell anybody about themselves?
Right.
You can't even, let's be real, execute a commencement speech. Just saying.
And with that, mic drop. MacBook drop.
Like, bro.
Exactly. Just go back to your vest.
Just go throw a ball around.
Exactly. Go sport.
Yep.
I am so glad that we were able to make this happen. My final question. I always like to ask for a resource recommendation.
Ooh.
Because I feel like we all learn differently.
Sure.
We all gravitate towards different different things. Mm. So whether it's a book, a podcast, a figure that you think is a great case study, who can you point us in the direction of that you're like, if you are looking to become a better leader or get comfortable with pivoting and you know, standing firm in those decisions, look at this.
Ooh, that's a hard one. I should have known you were going to ask me that, and I didn't.
I mean, yes, I got my curveball in for the episode. Like, yes.
I'm out of practice. Okay. So, I mean, in general, obviously stay curious, try to stay as updated as possible. I mean, I do read quite a bit of newsletters in the morning, okay. But my coach has recommended that I focus on deep work.
Okay.
So I literally bought the book Deep Work. Apparently that is something that CEOs have trouble with because we are spread far and broadly.
I feel like I'm being yelled at. Okay.
So I've been told I need to also have lanes to like focus and complete the thing as well. So Deep Work is my new book. So that's what I'm reading with a few other CEOs. We're doing a little bit of a book club. Wow, leadership, that's a tough one. I don't think there is like a book for leadership. I would just be more intentional about paying attention to the leaders that are around you, to the leaders that you've worked with, and trying to really have those like positive and negative takeaways. Like I actually write them down every now and again when I'm reflecting in my journal, because then I kind of summarize like the words that I want my leadership persona to be right now, because I do think different teams require different types of leadership. So I'm definitely leaning more into the care and to the kind of mixing of the transformation. Mm-hmm. I've brought in a lot of new people. I've inherited some amazing legacy people. So my leadership right now is focused on bringing people together in this world of remote working. So those are the two, you know. What else am I reading and looking at? I just finished Baby Reindeer. It's horrifying on Netflix.
Okay.
So not necessarily a professional thing.
Yeah.
But just wow.
Hey,
just
a thing that happened.
Yeah, a thing that happened. So yeah, just wow. Other than that, I mean, it's 2024. The world is out of control right now. So for all the marketers and PR folks, I think it's important to make sure that we're in touch with what's happening in the news. Because I think from now through the end of the year, it's going to be a little wild. Whatever kind of marketing or comms work you're doing, you have to be respectful of the space that you're doing it in. So that's my biggest advice for the rest of the year. The world is in crisis. Our country's in crisis. Make sure you have context before you just do marketing things.
Yes, yes. That is. Yeah. I have. There's a few companies we could send that to.
I know you want to like get out that lipstick.
But let's. Why don't we hold on it for a moment?
Let's just look at what's happening in the world, right? Maybe not today. Maybe adjust that calendar.
Make a different sound.
Yes.
Ooh. I love that you knew exactly what I was talking about. And that is the world of marketing. For you guys. Where can we find you, Jen?
CreatorDeck.com. That's our website. Definitely follow me on LinkedIn, Jennifer Cho. I am probably the only one that has Creator Deck or The Wing. The Wing Shorter, you can type that in.
So. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Amazing.
Amazing.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Oh my gosh.
Thank you for joining us. This was, well, I had a blast. I think it was a great conversation.
I felt like we were just chatting and catching up. So thank you so much for having me today. I feel like every conversation I have with you is just so natural and we get into so many different things.
Yes.
So I love what I've learned about you today.
Thank you so much,
Jen.
Thank you guys for joining us, for tuning in. Don't forget to go follow Jen, read all the things that she's talking about. She's a genius, if you couldn't tell already. So absorb everything that
likewise.
She puts out.
I love
thank you.
Thank
Until next time, keep ascending.